This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. While many people enjoy the large amounts of food present at holiday gatherings, those with eating disorders such as anorexia, bulimia, and binge eating may struggle with it. Not only is food a trigger, but the stress of being around so many people and family members can sometimes add to the problem. Joining us to discuss how to recognize that a family member or friend may have an eating disorder and how to help them during this festive time, author, wellness coach, and specialist in the treatment of eating disorders, the eating disorder pro, Dr. J. Renee Norton, and Lindner Center of Hope staff psychologist, clinical director of adult eating disorder services at Harold C. Schott Foundation Eating Disorders Program, and University of Cincinnati adjunct assistant professor of psychiatry and behavioral neuroscience, Dr. Sarah Lavenier. And you can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Renee and Sarah, thank you for being here today.
Thank you. Nice being here.
Renee, just describe to me, how tough really are the holidays for people who have eating disorders?
Well, it's hard on everybody, of course, because it's all about food and family, but it's particularly difficult for people with eating disorders. If you have problems with food or if you have problems with family members, they get worse typically during the holidays. So it's a very stressful time of year in general, and primarily what people do is they may overeat or over-restrict, but they also may do other things that cause pressure. They may overspend, for example. There is a lot of comorbidity when it comes to eating disorders, or they may overwork. They may buy too many presents, shop too long, work too hard, cook too many meals. So they get exhausted and end up feeling more pressure and more stress, and then you see more symptoms.
Sarah, what's your take on that? What do you see as being the difficulties that people with eating disorders are facing this time of year?
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I think part of it is just the overcommitment. And then especially people that have gone away to college, or this is just a time where everyone's getting together. There's a lot of pressure to make everything perfect, to have the holidays be just that right thing. And I think that puts a lot of pressure on these individuals even more than our everyday person, which we're all feeling stress. And then with these individuals, they feel a lot more of that.
So this just isn't about having too much food in front of you. This is about a lot of other things.
Exactly. What we see manifest with eating disorders is the food part, but it's the stuff behind it that's actually going on. So it's the emotional piece of being around other people, the stress, maybe the triggers of being around certain family members that might have certain expectations for them or the expectations they have on themselves. So it's not just about the food.
Renee, what are the different eating disorders that people can suffer from?
Well, there's anorexia, bulimia. There's a new one, bulimorexia. That's a combination of the two.
You can actually suffer from a combination of the two of these?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
That's really serious. More difficult to treat. So it's not technically a diagnosis at this point, but it's so common. I see it so frequently in my practice. So that's just exactly what it sounds like. It's somebody who restricts, and then when she eats, often she purges everything that she does eat. So it's very, very dangerous. And it's becoming increasingly more common. We're seeing more and more of it. And then there's also, of course, binge eating. And then there's just overeating.
Now, anorexia, I can never keep the two straight. Anorexia is
restricting.
Okay, and then bulimia is
binging and purging.
Okay.
And so that's confusing for family members because, well, the anorexia is obvious. You can tell when someone has anorexia because they keep losing weight and just can't stop. But the bulimia is much more difficult to diagnose. It's much more difficult. There's a lot of shame associated with the bulimia, so they can hide it for years. I've had patients who've been bulimic for half of their lives, and their parents are just finding out about it. So that goes on sort of behind closed doors. They look like they're eating fairly normally, especially in our society. It looks like normal eating, but then as soon as they get done eating, they are purging, or they're over-exercising, or they're using laxatives as a way of purging.
Sarah, do we have any idea what causes eating disorders?
We do. So no one in particular thing can cause an eating disorder, but there's three main things that make that up. So there's a genetic component that's continually to be studied, and there's a lot of research behind the biological basis of an eating disorder. And then there's also just the natural temperament and the psychological traits of that individual. And then the third part, which we have a lot of influence over, is the environment part. So that can be through bullying or having a history of abuse or being around certain triggers, or even dieting alone can be that extra trigger. So all three of those things coming together can create an eating disorder.
I have a very different take. I agree with everything that Sarah said, of course. But I also believe that in terms of the environment, that the food in our culture right now drives a lot of disordered eating. Just finishing up a book, and I talk about so eating disorders represent about 5 to 10% of the population still, so relatively small percentage, but growing and serious, obviously. But disordered eating, I think, is rampant, and I think it's affecting so many more people. We just tend to be very naive about what we are eating and how detrimental it is to the parts of the brain that manage eating behavior and the anxiety that can be created by foods that are just not good for us.
So what kind of foods would you have on your list there, Renee, as far as things that are bad for people?
Well, foods with GMOs, of course, okay. Foods with MSG, foods with sugar, especially high fructose corn syrup. That literally goes in and fries the leptin receptors in the brain so that that's the part of the brain that tells you you're hungry, you're not hungry, or you've got enough fat on board, you don't need any more. It literally fries those. Also, the high fructose corn syrup causes inflammation, which is an underlying cause of so much disease in our society. And finally, we know that sugar is as addicting as heroin. And so I mentioned when I first started that there's a lot of comorbidity with eating disorders. And we're seeing all sorts of addictions popping up along with the eating disorders, which are really serious and make intervention tricky.
And we actually treat, at Lindner Center, we do treat it a little bit differently. We really emphasize that there's no good or bad foods, so that food is just food and food is nourishing our body. Because we notice with these individuals, they can be very rigid in the way that they eat their food. So having a good list and a bad list can be actually really hard for them. So we really try to allow all foods to be possible. It's just about balance and variety in their diet.
And my response to that is if you knew that food had rat poison in it, you would not eat it, right? Even in moderation. So that conventional model of moderation, by the way, isn't working. It's got about a 35% success rate, whereas you can get a much higher success rate with clean food. In addition to which, let's just take the anorexia. She's usually a foodie. She usually knows all about good food. When you tell her eat all things in moderation, she's going to tune you out and turn you off. In addition to which, if the food causes gastrointestinal problems or neurological problems or anxiety or any one of a number of other issues, that compromises your ability to help her get better. So what I find is that, sticking with the anorexic again, when you teach her how to eat clean food, she trusts food again. And that's what I find over and over again, that is a really positive a factor in terms of recovery. It's the same thing with, I don't believe in dieting, obviously. Dieting is dangerous, actually causes weight gain. So this is not about dieting. This is not about restricting. This is about just looking for the foods that have incredible benefits from a nutritional point of view and avoiding the foods that are just straight up dangerous. Sugar is dangerous. It causes all sorts of problems, not the least of which is inflammation, and it makes people sick. And so we don't want someone who's trying to trust food again to eat foods that aren't actually good for them.
So just speaking to that a little bit, the importance of a team when you're treating an eating disorder. So we include a primary care doctor, we include a psychiatrist, we include a dietitian, and then having a therapist involved as well, so that we are being able to address any of those issues as they come up.
Sarah, is there any one particular group that's more susceptible to an eating disorder?
Well, when we're talking about, you mean types of people?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't discriminate. So it doesn't discriminate based on gender or based on race, based on age. It does discriminate in a little bit in terms of the westernized culture. So it's shown that in our culture, we're not good to ourselves. We talk a lot about the importance of a certain type of body, eating certain kinds of foods. So I think that can be a piece that can play into the eating disorder. There are certain temperaments of people that develop eating disorders. So I spoke to that a little bit before. People with anorexia typically have a little bit more of that perfectionistic, anxious type personality, that temperament that's been there from the very beginning. So there can be a little bit of that plays in.
Just as an example, and I would agree with what Sarah said, just as an example, we are right now in the United States, we are the wealthiest, unhealthiest country in the world.
It's sad, right?
Yes, it is. We are also the fattest country in the world, and we have the fattest children, and we have one of the worst infant survival rates and we have the best medical technology for the birthing process. So there's something wrong with our food. There's something wrong with the food supply. It's not our fault. Most people who are overeating believe that they're lazy or that they don't try hard enough or they're undisciplined. It's not true. The food industry is really adept at creating situations where we can't resist the food. They refer to us as heavy users. That's how they see us in the food industry, as heavy users. In fact, in the EU, where they prohibit these dangerous things in the food for lots of reasons, not just because it causes weight gain, but typically because it causes serious health issues, it only took 5% of the EU to stop importing U.S. foods for the U.S. to change the food that they send to the EU. So they take the bad stuff out of the food and send it to the European Union, and they leave the bad stuff in the food for us. That's just wrong.
Yeah, just an example of even the messages that we receive. If you watch just a string of commercials in a row, there will be a very dieting ad, and then following it will be, you know, a McDonald's ad per se about, like, you know, how to get certain foods into your body. So you're getting a don't eat it, but then eat it. So yes, you're getting all these mixed messages all the time, and it's very confusing for us as consumers of that.
Absolutely.
We will continue our conversation after this, and you can join us at 513-419-7100. And coming up in Focus on Technology, the interactive technologies accompanying the release of the new Star Wars movie. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. My guest this afternoon, author, wellness coach, and specialist in the treatment of eating disorders, the eating disorder pro, Dr. J. Renee Norton, and Lindner Center of Hope staff psychologist, clinical director of adult eating disorder services at Harold C. Schott Foundation Eating Disorders Program, and University of Cincinnati adjunct assistant professor of psychiatry and behavioral neuroscience, Dr. Sarah Lavenier. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And somebody sent us an email. They were listening to the part where we're talking about GMOs can cause eating disorders, and they were curious what role it plays and the data on how GMOs are involved in this.
Well, genetically engineered foods, for one thing, are causing problems with our guts. And so one of the more common issues that I see in treatment today is something called a leaky gut. Literally, grains that have been sprayed with insecticides, and that's a new thing. For the longest time, we just genetically engineered foods, and they had the DDT engineered into them. That causes a problem with the gut. If your stomach hurts when you eat something, guess what you're going to want to do? You're not going to want, it causes terrible bloating. It causes terrible gastric problems, and you aren't going to want to keep it. If you are very sensitive to your stomach hurting or getting big or bloating, you're not going to want to keep it in your body. So that's just one odd way that eating foods that are genetically engineered are having a terrible effect. Genetically engineered foods are designed to cause the animal eating them to grow very fast, to mature very quickly. That's why we see conventional farmers using genetically engineered crops, corn, for example, to fatten the cows and other animals that they are slaughtering. Well, interestingly, I mean, if you think about it, if it fattens the cow and we eat the cow, it just stands to reason, and now there's really good research showing that this actually does happen, that it causes us to gain weight. In addition to which, a grass-fed cow has very good natural fat it's called CLA, conjugated linoleic acid, that becomes muscle in the body. And so that's a good thing. That's a really healthy fat. Whereas a grain-fed cow, especially a genetically modified grain, is not doing us any good and is causing harm. So the leaky gut thing is coming about because we have so many toxins in our foods these days, and they cause us distress and discomfort. And that makes people who are bulimic, lemorexic, or anorexic very uncomfortable. So it's really causing a lot of difficulty that usually isn't understood very well.
Sarah, do you want to weigh in on that? No?
I I was thinking a little bit about just the grass-fed part and the other piece is that it's an important part just to be mindful of the food that we are eating. So being really aware of the food that we're eating. So getting education on that is not a bad thing. But this also living in our culture when there's all different kinds of food around, we want to allow people to be able to accept the food that's around them and not be restricting of the food, especially around the holidays, as that's what this conversation's about. There will be all types of food there at the holiday, and we want to allow people to be able to participate in the events that are there.
Exactly.
I think mindfulness is something you both would agree on.
Oh, yes, definitely. The dialectical behavioral therapy that I use is a mindfulness technique, and it can be life-saving for people. It really is helpful.
What are the signs? What are things you can look for that will tell you that a friend or a family member might be suffering from an eating disorder?
Mm-hmm. Well, with anorexia, it's really apparent. I mean, she is losing weight, and she can't stop losing weight. And it can be a bit deceiving in the beginning because it may be that she started out overweight, and family members are thinking, this is great. She's being so careful with what she's eating, and she's getting healthier, and she's exercising. This is great. But what happens, what you need to pay attention to if you're a family member, is if she can't stop losing weight. And there is a point at which it's obvious that she is unhealthy and she can't stop eating weight. Bulimia, as I mentioned earlier, is much more difficult to discern because it happens in private, and it's just not as obvious. But what to look for is if she eats a huge meal and then disappears right afterwards, she may be going to purge.
And around the holidays, I think it's important to notice if there's just a change in their mood. Maybe they're isolating, they're withdrawing a little bit more from what they normally like to do, and definitely around the food. Are they being more picky, or maybe even making up excuses like, you know what, I already ate, or I'm going to eat later, or I don't eat that anymore, or suddenly
I don't
restricting
feel good.
Certain kinds of food. Yeah, I don't feel good anymore, or I need to go to my room right after a meal. Things that seem out of normal character for them. And you might see some physical things as well, like Dr. Norton spoke of actually losing weight, and that could be part of it. But you might actually see, you know, things on their knuckles. You might see, like, an expansion of their jaw, which might indicate purging. So there can be things actually happening with their body. Maybe their hair's falling out, or there can be an improved amount of hair on their arms and things like that that's trying to keep them warm, showing that something's happening with their body.
So if you think a family or a friend or a family member has an untreated eating disorder, undiagnosed, how do you go about broaching the subject with them?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's really difficult, and it depends on the family, and it depends on your relationship with the patient, or the individual, rather. But what is very helpful in all cases is empathy. What isn't very helpful, this is a very triggering, let's just take anorexia again. It really triggers people. They are watching their daughter or their child lose weight, and they're worried about actually her death or her surviving. They get very upset and anxious. And what it appears to the individual suffering from the disorder that is happening is that they're being judged. So it's very important, if you have a child or a loved one, a spouse, a significant other that you think is going down the tubes and just can't stop losing weight, the first thing you want to do is communicate that you empathize. Even if you really don't understand it, because it's impossible sometimes to wrap your head around it, it's very important to communicate that you know how hard a time she's having and that you understand and you're just there to help. Threats are not very helpful. They come off as criticisms, and you don't want to push an anorexic. I mean, because she can go to the wall and she can win. So you really don't want to do that.
Yeah, I think it's important to remember that shame is one of the main emotions that these individuals feel. So really being able to listen to them and say, I've noticed these symptoms. I've noticed these things going on. Can we talk about this? These are the things I'm worried about. Can we find a way to get you some help? And I'll go with you and offer to be a part of the process with them.
Exactly. Yeah, that's very important. I almost always have a daughter come in with a mom. Once in a while, a dad brings his daughter in. But it's almost always, I think the eating disorders begin in the context of a family. And family members are, I find that the best family members can have the worst impact because they try the hardest. And often if they are trying to help and it's not helping, they try harder. So that often just doesn't make it any better.
It backfires.
Right.
Yeah. And for adolescents, family-based therapy has been one of the main modes of treatment for that. And the main part of that is really bringing in the family and working with the family to empower them to help their child. So having the family involved is really important.
We've got a couple of minutes left. What advice do you have for people who have eating disorders? How do you make it through the holidays?
Don't wait. So everybody thinks if I can just get through the holidays, you know, that I'll be okay. But the holidays are so stressful, and going through the holidays without support and without help actually can exacerbate your problem. And you can end up with a more serious situation. And when you are getting help, the most important thing that the therapist is going to do is help you get through the holidays in a way that allows you to recapture some of the warmth and wonderful things about the holidays that you're missing otherwise. Most of my patients tell me that they have given up their lives. They've given up being a mom, given up being a daughter, given up their families, and that the eating disorder has taken over. Get help.
Sarah, mm-hmm. You...
Yes, I would say the same thing. I really agree with that. And just knowing that they're not alone, that there are other people that have struggled. You're not the only one out there, and there are good resources in the area to really help you and support you. And having that support during the holidays and planning ahead and having the supports with you at the right times, having things planned for when there's triggers involved and things like that are going to be really important. So really reach out for help. Let a support person know that you need the help.
Absolutely.
Renee and Sarah, thank you so much for joining me this afternoon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Author, wellness coach, and specialist in the treatment of eating disorders, the eating disorder pro, Dr. J. Renee Norton, and Linner Center of Hope staff psychologist, clinical director of adult eating disorder services at Harold C. Schott Foundation Eating Disorders Program, and University of Cincinnati adjunct assistant professor of psychiatry and behavioral neuroscience, Dr. Sarah Lavenier. On Friday, the new Star Wars movie is coming out, and at least one Cincinnati ad agency says, look, it's going to look cool for interactive technology that's intended to broaden your film experience well beyond the movie's opening date. WVXU's Ann Thompson reports in Focus on Technology.